How's your golf game? Yeah, mine too, but more on that later. It's time for more golf talk on the CDGA Golf Show, your guide to golf around the world and in your neighborhood. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki.
Welcome into the CDGA Golf Show here on ESPN 1000, 100.3 HD2. You can take us on the go with the ESPN Chicago app. And don't forget, watch the show on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN1000Chicago. Also, you can find us on YouTube as well. Just search ESPN Chicago. The segment is sponsored by Fox Bend Golf Course, 312-332-3776. You want to talk U.S. Open with us? Ricky Fowler, currently your leader right now at 10 under. He's got a one-stroke lead over Wyndham Clark. And then Rory McIlroy and Xander Schauffele each at 8 under right now. Should be a pretty fun Saturday-Sunday here of golf out at the L.A. Country Club. So looking forward to how all of this sort of plays out over the next couple of days here. And there's a couple of other, you and I were just talking a little bit, Mike, about some of the long shots that maybe could make some noise here. Like you, Cam Smith, I think, was a good observation by you. Dustin Johnson, Scottie Scheffler, all these guys sort of in the top 10 right now, but with a little bit longer odds as well. So if you want to join us, 312-332-3776. But the leaderboard, if you're the USGA right now, you cannot be complaining about it. It's got some pretty good names on it.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, I think if you're the USGA, you're ecstatic right now. And NBC is hoping for a few other folks to climb into the mix to really make that leaderboard sparkle for Father's Day and to get as many eyeballs on the NBC Peacock as possible come this weekend. So it is a great leaderboard and looking to only get better.
Yep. 312-332-3776. Craig is in Lansing, Michigan. What's up, Craig?
Hey, what's happening? I want to talk about that. Two guys I've got money on and that I'm going to put a little bit more on. They had the two best rounds last week. Eric Cole had a 63 and Tyrrell Hatton had a 64. I'll get back to I just want to mention Eric Cole briefly because he's a 35-year-old rookie. Just had a birthday a couple days ago. He's been hot for a rookie. Good story behind him being so old, getting to the, you know, finally making it to the show. But Tyrrell Hatton, let me focus on him. The last 25 tournaments, he's only been cut once. He got cut at the end of the March, and then the last time before that, you'd have to go back to this time last year. And in those 25 tournaments, 15 top 15 finishes, including five in a row. The last five in a row, he's got six top fives. I mean, he's, you know, last week he had the second best round of the tournament, 10 birdies. This man's hot. I mean, he's not Scottie Scheffler hot, but he's one of the hottest golfers on the tour right now. And you're looking at plus 60,000 to win. But you know what? That's a little very long odds. But how about plus 4,000 to finish in the top 10? Plus 800 to finish in the top 20. Let's go back to Cole. Plus 5,000 to finish in the top 10, plus 900 to finish in the top 20. I think, and you know, you got Hatton's plus one right now, one over, and Cole's one under. These guys, either one of those guys, I think, could finish in the top 10 and better than that. So I think that you're getting value there with especially Hatton, one of the hottest golfers on the tour right now.
Yeah, I think it's a salient point. Sometimes it is fun, Craig, to sort of look at, all right, who are some of these guys who have been playing some pretty good golf and maybe the first two rounds haven't gone their way, but they're still hanging around. They're in the thick of things and they're probably not going to win, right? But you can find yourself into the top 10 or top 20, something of that nature there. I think that's certainly a good money-making opportunity for you.
Yeah, you know, and I wanted to talk about the course. I heard you guys mention that's when I tuned in. I right in time to hear Koepka had been complaining about it. Well, you know, let me get your guys' thoughts on this after I hang up. Don't you think that golf, look, the reason I watch these guys is because I want to see them go on a course that you and I would go on, and maybe we'd play well, maybe we wouldn't, but they would absolutely dominate. I don't want to see the best in the world, you know, looking like football follies out there because that, to me, that's to me the designer of the course has put themselves above the game. Like, I'm going to make these guys, you know, a couple weeks ago, PGA, you got the leader after round one, he finishes 20 over par. I mean, you know, Justin Thomas was like 17 over par, and now he's 14 over par on this course. So maybe Justin's just not playing good lately. But sometimes I look at a golf course and I think, you know, this shouldn't be about the designer of the course. Kind of like when you're watching a basketball game. I don't want the game to be about the referee. You know, sometimes I think they take it a little too far and make it more luck than anything else to win a tournament. Now, obviously, Ricky Fowler's having a great show, but don't you think sometimes they take it a little too far? And thanks a lot, boys. I appreciate it. I love you guys' show.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Craig. Appreciate it. 312-332-3776 if you want to join him here. In regards to his comments about the course, so right now you've got a leader who's 10 under. I'm going to read you off, over the last decade, all of the winning scores at the U.S. Open. You've got Matthew Fitzpatrick last year, 6 under. John Rahm the year before, 6 under. Bryson the year before, 6 under. 2019, Gary Woodland, 13 under. 2018, Brooks, 1 over. 2017, Brooks, 16 under. 2016, DJ, 4 under. Jordan Spieth in 15, 5 under. 2014, Martin Keimer, 9 under. 2013, Justin Rose, 1 over. So you see most of those in the between like 4 and 6 pretty much. 4 to 6 under. Right now, you look at the number of guys who are 4 to 6 under. Right now, 4 under is 10th in the leaderboard right now. So one of two things is going to happen here on Saturday and Sunday. You're going to see this course get extremely difficult, maybe to the point where it's going to be a little rough to watch, or you're going to see a guy go out there and be one of the more historic winning scorers that we've seen in the last couple of years.
And I think the USGA is going to do their best to, you know, as they say, defend the old girl, because they took advantage of her on Thursday, the first round. Those guys are just that good. And you give them an inch, they take a mile. Through the first 36 holes, the number of, or the percentage of fairways hit off the tee from the entire field is 65%. The tour average from a given tour stop to tour stop is 58%. So they are hitting 7% more fairways in the U.S. Open than they would in your typical PGA Tour event. So what's that tell you? Wide fairways, softer conditions. They needed the course to run fast and firm because they needed to make those fairways wide enough to allow for the run that you're going to get. But a lot of balls were supposed to be running into the rough is really what it amounts to. So with that marine layer, it allowed for balls to stay in the short stuff. So it looks like the field is more accurate than really it is leading you to believe. And I think, to your point, with the weather being what it is and the USGA doing what they do best, I think you could have two scenarios unfold here. One being that the scores are going to be higher and the course is going to play difficult, but there's going to be a couple outliers out there that are going to go out and still beat up that course in a way that a U.S. Open champion does in rounds 3 and 4. And consequently separate themselves. Ideally, you're going to have this a couple of guys that are still within a shot of one another doing it together so that there is a race. The fear you have, given the conditions that what we have here going into this round, is you have a recipe out there where you could have a guy long run away and then, you know, get a 4 or 5 shot lead, and then this thing is over by all accounts. So that's the fear you have when a golf course is sort of on the edge like this. It could go either way. But, you know, the caller did bring up, you know, Eric Cole, and I love Eric Cole's story. 35-year-old and, you know, rookie, but he comes from some lineage. Dad is Bobby Cole. His mother is Laura Baugh, who an outstanding LPGA player in her own right. So this kid, I call him a kid, he's 35 years old, but he could do some damage. I mean, he's the kind of player that has seen enough golf in his lifetime that this is just going to be another event. He doesn't know if it's the U.S. Open or a mini tour event. The guy won all kinds of mini tour events, so he could conceivably have a nice run here. But it's going to be one heck of a weekend.
Yeah, I think the other thing too, talking about the low scoring, like Thursday was the lowest scoring day in U.S. Open history. Like, not only did you have the two lowest rounds with the 62s fired by Ricky and Xander, but the entirety of the day, the average score, lowest ever in U.S. Open history.
That's
for
right.
an opening round. So, yeah, these guys are going low, and it's been pretty fascinating to watch so far. Doug's out in Arizona. What's up, Doug?
You had a previous caller, by the way. I like your show. I'm on the way to the first tee in Sun City West.
Oh, nice.
The last caller said that he thinks that the designers are putting themselves above the game. I couldn't agree less. I think a U.S. Open that ends up at one under with three guys battling down, trying not to make a bogey on 18 the final day is as exciting as it gets. A guy that can cut a corner on a 375-yard par 4 fascinates me. I think that's the way that the game is designed. Make the best, play the toughest possible courses. These designers are brilliant. Stretching out courses that aren't made to hold these guys. It's just my look at it. I love a one-under tournament.
Yeah. Listen, Doug, I appreciate the phone call there. I do like to see the best of the best go up and see the challenge there. Like, I'll admit, like, if this thing ends up being a winner at, like, 16, 17 under, it's going to feel a little dirty,
I think.
But, I like to see kind of like what we've seen. Like, the last 3 years, we've seen 6 under, 6 under, 6 under. And that's kind of like the area I like to see it at right there.
Right.
I don't like seeing the one overs. But like when you get like guys showing off their skill a little bit, and then on top of that, you get a pretty loaded leaderboard. That to me makes for a great golf tournament and a great finish.
Yeah, I think what the USGA wants to put out there is simply when you hit good shots, you get rewarded. I don't think they want anything to be, you know, too much of a massacre, if you will, and that whole leaderboard is all over par. I'm right there with you. I love watching great shots being rewarded. Bad shots should be penalized. It's just that simple. I don't think the golf course should be the news of the day as we watch tomorrow. Much like the one caller said, how a referee either is in the game or not part of the game. The golf course really shouldn't be. And the golf course is very unique. And I think for us getting a look into LACC North gives us an opportunity to see the shortest par 3 in major championship history. And I will love it if they play that hole because they can play it as short as 80 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be interesting. Ricky earlier in the week said, if they do that, I'm going to hit it short and try to chip it up, a la Billy Casper in the 1959 U.S. Open at Wingfoot, where a number 3, he laid up with a 6-iron all 4 days and got it up and down. So, you know, you have those kinds of holes, but then you turn around and you've got another par 3 at 290 yards. But then you've got a par 4 at 330, and you've got par 5s, 620 some odd yards. So this golf course is going to give you a little of everything. And I think from that perspective, and if the conditions get the way they are, I think the USGA will have it dialed in perfectly for the next 2 days.
All right. Coming up next, I want to lay something out for you here. A reason why I think Ricky Fowler could struggle a little bit today and maybe even tomorrow as well. We'll do all that when we come back here. 312-332-3776. If you want to join us this segment, sponsored by Fox Bend Golf Course.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. Welcome into the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. Presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Here's your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki.
This segment brought to you by Golf Elgin, home of Bowes Creek Country Club and the Highlands of Elgin. You want to join us here? 312-332-3776, talking all things U.S. Open. And I was telling you before the break, I think that there could be a little cause for concern for Ricky here as he hits round two. You look at his first two rounds, what do you see on his scorecard? Obviously, he's at 10 under right now.
Yep.
A lot of squares, a lot of circles.
A lot of circles.
You do not see a lot of empty slots, a lot of blank spots, and just the plain number. Not a lot of pars for Ricky. You look at some of the outputs that he's had so far, and it has been certainly an adventure for him so far. You look at it, you count him up. On that first day, he goes out there, and he has 10 birdies to go along with the two bogeys. Then on the next day, his follow-up act, he has 8 birdies to go along with six bogeys. So he's scoring up or down on 14 of the 18 holes here. That shows me a guy that's really going for it. And maybe he plays a little bit different now with a lead here. But we could see an interesting scorecard for Ricky if some of these things don't start to break his way as much as maybe they have these first couple of days.
True. Yeah. And, you know, he only made 3 pars yesterday.
Yeah.
That's crazy. But yeah, that's golf Ricky Fowler style. But to your point, I think he's to play like an open champion. He's going to have to behave like one, and you're going to have to start seeing a lot more pars. Mm-hmm. And I think par is going to be a good score the rest of the way through. Sprinkle in a few birdies and avoid the squares on your scorecard, mm-hmm. or bogeys or worse. And that's how you become a champion. And I think this day, today is going to determine whether or not Ricky's going to win. I mean, he could take himself out of this just as easily as he could cement himself. That's just how Ricky goes. But I think really what you're pointing at is the volatility of his scorecard needs to come down a little bit and really show more consistency on circles and no shapes on the scorecard or leaving it as a par.
Yeah, and listen, I'm intrigued to see how the course is set up today. It'll be fascinating to see what kind of approach they want to take with, all right, how difficult do we make this now that we look at where we're at from a leaderboard standpoint and seeing all these guys that are 7, 8, 9, 10 under par. I mean, your top 5 is all 7 under or better right now.
That's right.
It's a pretty – it feels like there could be a little bit of a bigger challenge these next couple of days. And I'd imagine the USGA – probably going to try to set something up like that.
Yeah, I mean,
and I imagine the members of the course, too, probably want to see this thing play a little more difficult as well.
Yeah, because, you know, that to me is the most intriguing storyline once this championship is here and gone, is how did the Los Angeles Country Club membership really feel about it when it was all said and done? It's one thing when they have the event and it's on its way to arriving to your community, the date, it's coming down the stretch, and your golf course has been taken away in bits and pieces, the club, because of all the build-out that needs to happen, and then the USGA mandates that the course gets no play. And they don't have another golf course to which, well, they do, but for the number of members that they have, it's going to be an inconvenience. And so when your club, you turn it over, and now you have the world's greatest taking advantage of it in a way that is not, well, how should I say, it doesn't reflect nicely in terms of how the course is laid out, and the members want that tough, you know, first day, and it didn't come out that way. I'm sure there was a lot of pressure from, you know, the who's who in the membership on top of the USGA saying, what are you going to do? And I have been in those situations myself when we were doing major championships, and I'll never forget when we were at the Inverness Club, and the field did just about basically what they're doing to LA Country Club on the first day, and the membership was so unhappy with us. They thought we made the golf course too easy, and there are just certain things that you have to allow for, and you know, if you are thinking, for example, you're going to get wind in August in Ohio and it stays unusually calm, well, that's a problem. I mean, that's how they're going to take advantage of these things. So at the end of the day, it's going to be interesting to see what the membership thought about hosting this thing, because it'll be interesting to see if they get slotted again. There's very few openings between now and 2050 for U.S. Opens to be, you know, assigned to various clubs around our country. And I know they're going to want to go back here, but it's just, will the membership want the USGA to come back? That's going to be the real question.
Right. It is interesting to always hearing like the member perspective from some of these courses.
Because the USGA...
The ultimate first world problem, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's...
Members complaining that their country club course is too easy.
It's too easy. We're not making enough money, or, you know, we're only going to make so many millions, so we may not be able to put in a 50-meter pool. We might only be able to put in a 30-meter pool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, big life's problems, right? But I can tell you the three words that are probably posted inside the superintendent's office as well as USGA's trailer that they have there on site, and that would be firm, fast, and bouncy. That's what they want this golf course to be like for the next 2 days. Firm, fast, and bouncy. And that way, balls will go where they should go versus being able to control them from where they don't want them to go. And that is a big difference. And that's why these fairways are so wide. And if you look, you can see that, you know, part of Brooks's issue is how there's a lot of blind tee shots, which that's okay. Aaron Hill's had a lot of blind tee shots. But balls ending up in the same place. And that's the one thing I have noticed is that a lot of tee shots all seem to collect in the same given area. Or when they miss certain shots at certain areas of the course, they come down to an area. And I'm amazed at how many divots that aren't really getting really properly put back together. And I just wonder if on Sunday at an inopportune time on the back nine that somebody's going to wind up in somebody else's divot from a day or so ago.
Right.
And it could have quite an influence on that particular shot at that moment in time.
Yeah, everything sort of seems to funnel a little bit the golf course right here. It reminds me of one of the course, and again, this isn't like a championship style course, but like I'd played at Tobacco Road out in North Carolina, and my buddy had played there before, and he said, just get it up on the green. Get it up on the green because everything sort of funnels towards the hole. So don't worry about missing left, missing right. If you just get it up in the general area, you'll be fine because everything sort of funnels to the hole. And this is sort of what it's reminding me of, where just get it up in a certain area and everything's going to funnel a certain way and you can set yourself up in a nice spot. Now it's a little bit different when you're going on a green versus a fairway because, like you mentioned, you could end up in someone's divot like that, and then you find yourself in a little bit of trouble.
Oh, yeah. And again, with these guys not knowing this golf course, where they can miss it necessarily, because each day now is presenting a new golf course for them to try to learn and understand. That's why, you know, guys like Patrick Cantlay, guys like, you know, Max Homa, Max missed the cut, but the Cantlay, you know, knows the golf course. Colin Morikawa knows the golf course. They're sort of back there at that plus one, plus two area. They still could play good enough because of the volatility of the golf course, good or bad, and put them into this thing come the back nine tomorrow.
Yep. Going to be a lot of fun to watch here. All right. When we come back, we will get into some of the nuances of the golf course, some of the things that you may have heard out there. So maybe some interesting noises as well that you may have heard out there on the golf course as well. We'll get into all of that when we come back. And also a little bit of a Tiger Woods update that I want to talk to you a little bit about, Mike. 312-332-3776. If you want to join us here, this segment brought to you by Golf Elgin and the home of Bowes Creek Country Club and the Highlands of Elgin, the CDGA Golf Show. We'll be right back.
This is the CDGA Golf Show, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club, ESPN 1100.3 HD2, and the ESPN Chicago app. From PGA to where you should play, this is the CDGA Golf Show with Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
U.S. Open with you here on ESPN 1000. Ricky Fowler, your leader at 10 under right now. Pretty good leaderboard so far with Wyndham Clark behind him. But then you get Rory McIlroy, Xander Schauffele tied for third, two strokes off the lead. You got DJ in a tie for six right now. Sam Bennett, who made his name known at the Masters when he was an amateur, Five under right now in a tie for eight with Scottie Scheffler, Cam Smith four under in 10th, and then Tony Finau all by himself in 11th at three under right now. 312-332-3776. If you want to join us here on the show, this segment brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. Visit any of our three Chicagoland locations today. Bill's in Grays Lake. What's up, Bill?
Hey, guys. Great show as always.
I appreciate it.
I love seeing the professional part of majors. And what I mean is, it's cool to have them mic'd up on the tee box to hear them and the caddy go back and forth about what shot, what club. And I think we all as golfers kind of put ourselves in a situation of what we would do in that scenario. And I just think the shot tracer, the conversations that we hear, and the equipment changes these players do for a course like this is what, outside of the main storylines, I really pay attention to. I'm not sure if I'm the only like golf dork that does that or really gets into it, but I just wanted to hear you guys' thoughts. Thanks as always. See you next week.
Yeah, appreciate it, Bill. Thanks for the call. I think he's right. I love that stuff there too. Like, you think about the conversations I always find fascinating between player and caddy, but also like the reactions on tee shots too. Like, there was a moment yesterday near the end of the coverage where Colin Morikawa didn't like his tee shot on a par three, and you just hear him. You see the ball start to sail towards the bunker, and you just hear, just like you or I would be on a par three. No, 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 no. Like, get left, get, like, all that stuff. You hear all of that, and it just kind of humanizes the entire experience of what they're going through during their sport.
Absolutely, it does. And, in fact, with some of these hot mics, Jordan Spieth was caught with an F-bomb yesterday.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's just them being them. And it is a bit refreshing, but I love when as soon as they hit it, and it's like the old adage, the batter or the hitter always knows. And he hits the shot, and it looks like a good swing, but he's like, no! Mm-hmm. And then obviously you see the thing going wayward. But I think having more microphones and being able to hear some of the banter and some of the strategy that Bill's alluding to just makes the telecast that much more intriguing because, you know, there was a moment yesterday, and I'm the name of the player is escaping me, but they were on the tiny little par three, mm-hmm. and he backed off of it, and he changed the club, and he went back to another club, and then they went back, and they systematically did all the arithmetic about what he had to cover, how he had mm-hmm. to cover it, looking at the wind, and it's just amazing to the degree that these guys can get it down to the yard. And
right.
not only get it down to the yard in terms of factoring what they have to do in terms of a plan, but then to actually execute it and make that ball land literally 3 to 6 feet over the cover area and then finish, you know, 6, 8 feet away is extraordinary to me. How they have not only the ability to figure it all out mathematically, but that's the easy part, but then to dial in that three-quarter six-iron that they need to have at that very moment, at that very time, and then execute it. It's just, it's like watching artistry.
Nothing makes you say wow more than if you're a golfer and you watch a golf tournament. Because
exactly.
It's like the way that these guys executed, because you've been out there. It's not the same as, like, if you're watching basketball or football, because you and I haven't played basketball and football in years, right?
Yeah, it's a good thing, too.
Yeah. But, like, golf, you're going out, you're playing every single day. Like, the thing about golf is, like, I said this earlier in the week, but, like, you look at what LIV and PGA is, and you can say, oh, I'm not a fan of professional golf anymore. But you may still be a golf fan because you go out and play every weekend or something of that nature. It's different. And because of that fandom, you can, like, your ability to still play the sport while also consuming the sport on television with the majors and with the week to week on the PGA Tour. Like, there's nothing that makes you go wow more than watching some of these guys play week in and week out, because it's like, damn, I could never execute something like that.
Right. And what I also love is when the guys in the booth know the type of shot that they're going to execute, and then they call it. They're saying, look how he just lays that club wide open. Mm-hmm. And then they hit these extraordinary flop shots with the ball well below their feet over, you know, a bunker that they just don't want to be short on. And yet 9.5 times out of 10, they pull this thing off as if, It's us just trying to hit a little bump and run just off the fringe. I mean, it's so the ability to appreciate what they're doing and to the level that they're doing it on the stage that they're doing it is extraordinary. The other thing that I really like with the telecast is the additions of the microphones. And I think the live telecast really, I think, showed the PGA where and how you can put microphones that actually enhance the broadcast. All the way down to just when the ball goes into the cup, that magic little sound to hear mm-hmm. that thing dropping into the hole. But I love when they carry balls on a par three or an approach out into the par fours or fives, and you can actually hear the ball hit the green because it's so firm, and yet they can make that thing still stop and dance on a dime. You know, much of us with greens that firm, I don't care. I can put you in the fairway. I'll put you on a cart path. I'll put you on any surface. You can't make it stop because of the conditions that they're on. But these guys, they just know how to impart spin, use their grooves and face angles in ways that we could only dream of. And, you know, when you say that these guys are good, they're not just good. They're extraordinarily good.
Yeah.
And that's really cool to watch when you put them on a venue like this that for us, I go back to what would an 18 handicap shoot out there if they played by the USGA rules of golf and had to finish up and couldn't pick up. I guarantee you an 18 wouldn't be breaking 120 out there. No. It just would not happen.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah. Real quick, I do want to give away two CDGA prize packs. 312-332-3776. Be callers 5 and 10 right now. 312-332-3776. And happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there as well. So one of these other little ancillary stories from the U.S. Open has been some of the houses along the golf course. Like, you've seen shots of Lionel Richie's house and mm-hmm. Just the beauty that is. But one of the intriguing things that sort of caught my ear more so than my eye, but the Playboy Mansion is also along the golf course, so right along the 14th tee
and 13th green. Yeah.
And what's interesting is that you can hear animals.
You can.
As a part of it. There's a little zoo in the back there, and part of it was because Hugh Hefner was not allowed into LA Country Club. So how did he try to get back at them? Well, he put a miniature zoo in his backyard, and all of the golfers can hear monkeys, they can hear peacocks, they can hear cockatoos, they can hear all these different animals in the 14th tee box while they're teeing off there. And it's kind of been a little funny sort of distraction for some of these golfers, and something that I don't think a lot of them anticipated, because they're not respecting the silence of Augusta, right? You're not getting Augusta silence. No, you're getting a wailing zoo in the background while you're trying to tee off or make a putt.
And in fact, that story is very true, because I've played LA Country Club and had the opportunity, and it was pointed out by the member saying, if you look through the trees or the bushes here, you can actually see right in and see the grotto and see the mansion. But he told us a story about exactly what happened with Hugh and what he did to get back at him, which I thought was kind of interesting. But, you know, just two doors down the street from Hugh's is Aaron Spelling's house. And there's all kinds of stars that are in and around LA Country Club, either on the course or in and around it. Sean Diddy Combs, mm-hmm. he's got a home out there. Humphrey Bogart, Paul Newman, Ella Fitzgerald. But rumor has it that Lionel Richie, he's not staying at his house this week, but he rented it out for a paltry $10 million.
Just for the weekend.
Just for the week.
Wow.
Yeah, a whole week. So I think somebody calculated what it is. It comes out to some extraordinary number on a daily basis. But it was not a player. It was obviously somebody corporately who got involved. And, you know, and
it's
again,
about $1.5 million a day.
It basically
a little
is.
Under, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you've got some close friends and important clients, I mean, what's you know, $1.5 million
that's
a day?
Mil,
I mean,
right?
Come on. You know, and, but it's a unique situation going on out in LA. You know, they're only allowing 22,000 fans in. That's it. Mm-hmm. And then when you start adding in the media and some of the volunteers and the whatnot, you'll probably get up into the upper 20s, maybe close to 30,000, which for a U.S. Open or a major championship is quite small. It's a very small piece of property. So trying to get a ticket to that event is very LA-esque like. You know, it's a place to be seen. You better have some money or some contacts to get the tickets to go. But it's going to be a special weekend out there for sure.
Yep. All right. When we come back, we will go around the CDGA. And real quickly, I will give you that Tiger Woods update as well on what his future may look like in the world of golf. This segment brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. Visit any of our three Chicagoland locations today.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. And on the air right now, this is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
Thank you to Jake Cantu and Sean Graney for producing today's show. This segment brought to you by Coghill Golf and Country Club, a pure golf experience. Mike, we've been talking a lot of U.S. Open today, but one of the off-the-course stories from the week, this came out yesterday, Tiger Woods will miss the Open Championship at Royal Liverpool. Don't think that's coming as much of a surprise to anybody there. But worth the update. Again, he doesn't know when he's going to be back. Earlier this year, he had an ankle fusion surgery done to alleviate the pain that he's been dealing with. And he played in the Masters, but we really haven't seen much of him this year. And can you count on your hands how many more times we're going to see Tiger Woods?
Yeah, I don't know. And at least the news wasn't any worse. I guess we all
this
assumed.
It
was expected. As soon as I see anything about Tiger Woods, I cringe a little bit, worrying that it's going to be more of an issue or it's worse than what we thought. But at least this is just officially taking him out of the British Open. For all intents and purposes, his season is effectively over. I think the next time we see him will be Riviera, and hopefully we see him at Augusta as the next major. But what's been strange with all that's been going on in the ecosystem of golf, not only have we not seen Tiger Woods, we haven't heard from Tiger Woods because it will be interesting to get his take on where things are in his mind's eye between LIV, PGA, the PIF, and all the things that Jay Monahan has cooking, and Tiger is nowhere to be heard or seen.
Right. And one of the other things, though, Charlie Woods, he has been seen. He's been at the U.S. Open out at L.A. Country Club. So one day, maybe he'll be teeing it up in one of these big majors. I'd imagine it's going to be sooner rather than later.
Oh, I think so. I think we'll see Charlie in his first USGA championship. It'll either be the junior championship or the U.S. amateur. It'll be one of those two is where I expect to see Charlie Woods.
Yep. Should be very interesting. The next iteration of Woods in the golf sphere. All right. Mike, what is going on around the CDGA this week and beyond?
Well, we've got a few things going on, actually. We do have our CDGA Foundation online auction. Now, this is an annual thing. We opened it up on Monday, and everybody has until noon tomorrow. Now, if you want to see and get something for Dad that's unique, different, and special as it relates to golf travel, private club golf experiences, tickets to some of the best sporting events in our city and around our area, and some incredible sports memorabilia, just go on to cdga.org, and right on the homepage, we have our link to go in and donate. But again, because of Father's Day, we are cutting off all bids right at high noon. So if you want to get yourself something for Dad, you could get it. And then by noon on Father's Day, turn right around before golf gets going and say, Dad, look what I just got you, compliments of the CDGA Foundation. So that's all going on now, and all the money goes towards our efforts and our pillars with the foundation, which are war veterans, individuals with disability, and youth. Also, birdies in baseball. We still have some tickets left for July the 6th at American Family Field. You can play golf at X Golf at 11 a.m., and then the first pitch is at 110. $100 a person gets you 9 holes of golf, an open bar during the golf, CDGA gift bag, and an infield box seat to watch our Chicago Cubs beat up the Milwaukee Brewers. Again, another great idea for Dad and Father's Day. And then on Monday, Juneteenth, we've got a member day up at Strawberry Creek. And then we also have our Net Better Ball event out at St. Charles. So good luck to all the participants there. On Wednesday, we have the Women's Tour Trifecta at McRae Memorial. So again, good luck to all the ladies out there on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, our first CDGA four-person scramble qualifier will be played at our presenting sponsor of the show, Glenview Park. So we're going to have that going on Thursday. And then also, breaking news for our July 28th event at the Glenview Club. Titleist is going to be the presenting sponsor of the ESPN Listener Appreciation Outing, Friday, July 28th. If you've never been fitted for a Titleist golf ball or never gone through a ball fitting, you're going to have that opportunity to do it up at Glenview Park and walk away with, I don't know how many complimentary golf balls you'll be able to get from them, but they will be giving you free golf balls, and Titleist will have a presence there with us among all the other things that we have going. So go to cdga.org and get a twosome, a foursome, and join Tyler, myself, and some other CDGA ESPN personalities and some other celebrities that will be with us from the Chicago Sports Arena. And again, $125 a person, it gets you all kinds, or $150 a person, gets you all kinds of gifts, lunch, food, band, it all at the Glenview Park. So join Tyler and I there, cdga.org to sign up. And then lastly, we have a couple of really cool member benefits out at Fox Bend. A twosome special for $80 if you book online at foxbendgolfcourse.com. Bowes Creek, $62 Monday to Wednesday before noon. And then, in fact, Glenview Park, they've got $149.95 foursome special after 3 o'clock. So lots of stuff to go on if you're a CDGA member and the CDGA Fantasy Golf, which you are absolutely kicking my rear end again. So it looks like we're going to go 2 wins for you, 1 for me this year. But that's what's going on.
Yeah, lots of fun stuff there. All right, appreciate everyone tuning in. We will be back next week. A segment brought to you by Cog Hill Golf and Country Club, home of 42 practice bays with Top Tracer technology. Have a happy Father's Day. Enjoy the finale of the U.S. Open. And we will talk to you next week. The Odds Couple with Shay Norling and Mike North is coming up next.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.